the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. Welcome to Business Rockstars, where I am joined by Dr. Kapil Gupta. He is the CEO and co-founder of MedCircle. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Alex.
You bet. So if you could tell us, what is MedCircle, first of all?
MedCircle is basically a platform which we created where anybody on the universe who has any interest in a healthcare topic, they can just go there, sign up, pick that topic, and forget about it. We go search the World Wide Web, find trusted information on that topic, and send it to the person.
Yeah, because I think we can all relate to having some kind of symptom, and we go down the rabbit hole of Google, of looking up what we might have, but obviously, there's a trap with that where it might Absolutely. Just be a cold, and the next thing you know, you think you have cancer, and you know, you're getting all this information on Google that a lot of times is not very valid or pertinent to your particular symptoms, I would imagine is part of the inspiration. So if you could speak to that a little bit about how you are really making sure that this is a credible place for people to go.
Yeah, I think what you just said, that people get lost on Google, that was one of the problems we want to solve. More than just searching for a question, if someone has a specific condition, even a chronic condition primarily, they stop looking for information because they just get busy with their lives. So what we do is we actually check where we are pulling the information from. We take all the sources, we get them verified by trusted healthcare providers who make sure anything published on a specific platform or a website is credible. Then we curate content and send it to the user. So the way we make sure it is trusted is we make sure the people who are publishing on a website are trusted sources. To give an example, if someone is suffering from diabetes, now there may be new information published on, say, Mayo Clinic, NIDDH, NIH site, or New York Times. So what we do is we curate all these articles, put them at one place so you don't have to do the search.
So do you make some of your own content as well?
Right now, we are not. Right now, we are a platform where we curate content and send it to the consumer. We don't write our own content.
And part of the benefit is obviously the way you can search. So tell me a little bit about the user experience when you go to your website or your app. What can you look for to make sure you're getting that targeted, curated content that is most pertinent to what you're dealing with?
So as a user, when you sign up, one of the first steps is we ask you to pick a topic. Once you pick a topic, you have a feed, and that's what you need to do. You sign up, you pick a topic, and you will have a feed where you will see all the content. So there's nothing else you need to do. So the user needs to make a call or make a choice what health conditions or health topics they're interested in, and the customized, or we call it hyper-personalized feed, shows up. And that's about it.
Right. And you, of course, are a doctor at one point, were a practicing physician. So that's a big change,
yes.
Going from being a practicing doctor to now an entrepreneur, very different lifestyle. Tell me a little bit about that. Let's circle back to the beginning of your physician days and how you ended up in entrepreneurship.
Absolutely. So I think one other side, before I dive into that piece,
sure.
One other piece of MedCircle is it is also a publishing platform for healthcare providers. So any licensed healthcare provider can actually sign up on MedCircle as a healthcare provider and create their own content. People can follow them and they will receive educational content straight from a healthcare provider. So now going back to my doctor days, so one of the problems that I used to face in my practice of medicine was if I have 100 patients I've seen over a period of 6 months, I did not have a digital tool to send them information. If they come see me in my office, I give them a printout. If they don't see me in 6 months, I don't give them any health information because they are at their home. They have never seen me. So to solve that problem, we created MedCircle, that it is a place where healthcare providers can deliver information to the consumers. And then we as a company curate information straight for the consumer. So definitely changing from the doctor days to an entrepreneurial world is very, very different. But my passion for solving that problem got to a point where we decided that we need to take care of this and we started MedCircle.
Interesting. So it's this unique collaboration between your technology and trusted, curated content,
right.
And also the doctor and their patient and what that patient needs.
Right.
And so you have a co-founder. Tell
right.
me a little bit about how you guys got together and decided that this is the idea that you really wanted to move forward with in the business world.
So our co-founder is Doug Colbert. And Doug Colbert as a successful entrepreneur in the past. And after his successful ventures, he actually started a clinic in Chicago. It was a mental health clinic for inner city kids. When that clinic was running, the healthcare providers also told him one of the problems that they have is they don't have a digital tool where they can, in a group fashion, send healthcare content to the parents of those children. So they tried doing this on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, but those platforms were not customized for health information. I got connected to Doug through a personal friend, and our vision was pretty much the same, that we want to solve this health information platform outside clinical care. We talked about it, and I was finishing my business school at that time, and we decided, okay, let's build a platform for this. And we are here now, and it's a live product, and that's how it all came about.
Which is amazing, and it's all turned out. But I know that making that transition was challenging.
Absolutely.
Mostly because you got a lot of resistance from some of the people in your life. So tell me a little bit about what they were saying and how you had to push past that.
Absolutely. I think it was a transition time for me also. I went through this period where I was thinking, is this the right decision? Working as a physician, practicing for 6-7 years, you get into that phase where you have a comfortable lifestyle, you have a good income, and then you hear about entrepreneurship where it is a lot of challenges coming about. But when I met with Doug, the passion for solving this problem, and it was still in healthcare. So it was so high. And then I spoke to some people. They said, if you have to do it, you have to do it now. Your standard job will be like a golden handcuff. You will want to do it. You have to get out of it and make a decision. Talked to a lot of people. And then at one point, we decided, okay, this is the people validated our concept. Before I dived into it, when I will tell people this is what we are trying to do, they actually like the simplicity of the concept. And that made me further believe that, yes, this is the right time. And we started MedCircle.
Yeah, it's scary leaving an industry and a position that works, that you're doing well in, that you're successful in. And there's that comfortability and security that comes along with it. And I think that can be the hardest for aspiring entrepreneurs, to leave that and deciding whether or not it's a good idea to. But I like what you said, that you had your idea validated. And I think that would be a really good starting point for an entrepreneur who's watching or listening and is toying with whether or not they should leave their secure job at the moment. Start testing your idea.
Absolutely.
So how did you test your idea?
It was very anecdotal. It was not a very structured testing. So lots of times what I will do is, even whenever I'm traveling, so I'm on a flight, someone sitting next to me, so I will just start talking to them. And even though I was still full-time practicing, I will tell them that I have a company that does this, even though I did not have a company. We had not started anything. And when they will hear that idea and they will say, oh, this is a great idea, I will use it. Do you have it? I said, no, we have not launched it yet. So I went about doing that. And lots of times, even when my patients were coming to see me, I will ask them, if you had a platform like this, will you use it? And I even one time just drove around from Los Angeles all the way to Phoenix, and I will just stop at coffee shops in the middle of nowhere. And I will talk to people sitting in those coffee shops. What if you had a product like this, will you use it? So that was a great validation personally for me that, yes, one, people understand it. And two, people said, yes, I will use it if I have it.
That's great. How do you know that people weren't just blowing smoke and that they were actually giving you valid feedback?
I think health is a slightly different subject. And when people start talking about it, they actually speak their heart. It is not just because, and if I'm in the middle of a town on a highway with 1,000 people and I stop at a coffee shop and talk to them, again, some things I had to believe in. And it was a spectrum of people that I spoke to. Someone sitting on a flight with me, someone at a coffee shop, my patients. And it was a common concept that people, one, they understood it. That was also important for me. It was not that they're not understanding it. So, and rest, I had to believe in it.
Yeah, and I think that you can tell a lot of times by someone's enthusiasm, how much detailed feedback they're giving you. Yes. It's one thing just to be like, yeah, I'd use it. And yes. another to be like, oh, yeah, I would because of this situation where I could have used it here. And I'm sure the quality of the feedback was very helpful.
Absolutely.
But we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about how you raised capital and so much more. So sit tight. We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
I mean, I don't make money with social media, okay? So what I do is I get attention with social media, and attention precedes ever getting money, you know? The money I don't have today, you have. Somebody else has the money.
Yeah, you always say, who's got my money?
Who's got my money, right? this should be your battle cry. So with social media, I'm not looking to get money from someone. I'm looking to get their attention. Attention precedes the ability to get the money.
A new poll says more Americans approve of President Trump than they do the big media. That's why millions are tuning in to Newsmax TV, America's new conservative channel. On Newsmax TV, see Bill O'Reilly, Pat Buchanan, Alan Dershowitz, Mike Reagan, and more. Bill O'Reilly's No Spin News Show is on Newsmax TV. Get it on DirecTV Channel 349, Xfinity 1115, Dish 216, Uverse 1220, Fios 615, and Spectrum. Newsmax TV. Real news for real people.
Message and data rates may apply.
What if there were a top-ranked business degree that gave you access to world-renowned faculty leaders and mentors, but on your schedule? The W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University is now accepting high-quality applicants for its online MBA, Information Management, and Business Analytics Master's programs. Learn more about the W.P. Carey business degrees online. For more information, text RANK to 79645. That's R-A-N-K to 79645.
You shouldn't have.
We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. Welcome back to Business Rockstars, where we are continuing our conversation with the CEO and co-founder of MedCircle. So capital is one of those topics that every entrepreneur has on their mind. And when I interview entrepreneurs like yourself, they seem to get that capital at different points in their journey. And specifically when you're raising investment money, there's this question of, do we need to have a product or service first, or can we actually pitch our idea without having anything? You were in a unique situation where you came up with your proof of concept but didn't build out the site yet, and you were able to successfully raise money. So can you speak to that?
Everybody raises money at different stages of their life cycle of a company. And I think there are multiple reasons for that. One is who you are. Lots of times, if an engineer starts a company, they, for building the product, they don't need money. They are the capital. So they will put their hours in to build the product. If you come from a background where you are not engineer, you're not a software engineer, especially in technology world, then you need an engineer to build a product for you. You need the team to build a product for you. Either they will come as co-founders or you will need to employ them. Then you need the capital earlier stage. So that's one. The second piece is, who are you connected with? Raising capital at early stage of your company, a lot depends on your network besides what the product is. We were slightly different in a sense that we, because of our co-founder, Mr. Doug Colbeth, he is a successful entrepreneur from his previous companies. So he had the network where we could build a proof of concept, show them the proof of concept, and then not just show them the proof of concept, but show them the vision 3 to 5 years from that. And that was our strategy for raising capital. That's what my advice for everybody who's want to raise capital is. It is not what you have the vision as of today, what you want to do today. You should have a clear vision where it can get in 3 to 5 years. Because
yeah.
That's what the investors are looking for.
That sentiment has been echoed by many of the entrepreneurs that I've interviewed, that ultimately they're investing in your future, where you could go, and
yes.
ultimately the bottom line.
Yes.
But it's not just that. Of course, numbers matter. They're really betting on the founders. Absolutely. And I can absolutely see why you're saying your co-founder was such an asset to pitching to investors.
Absolutely.
And to your point, you needed a programmer. I know that off camera, we chatted a little bit that you think it's very, very important if you don't have that skill and you're creating a technology company that involves programming, that you have someone full-time on board who's invested and has some skin in the game, correct?
Absolutely.
What have been the biggest changes to being a part of this entrepreneurship world?
Good question. Sometimes I ask them myself. But I think one thing is, as I said, it is there are lots of uncertainties. So you need to balance yourself in those uncertainties. Practicing as a physician, life is very certain. You know exactly what you're doing. You have a steady cash flow. When you come into the entrepreneurial world, you may have a vision, but you go out on the streets, people may not like it. You don't know where what life will bring in a year from now. So you need to realize those uncertainties, filter them out, and then continue the journey. People will ask you, where do you see yourself in a year? Where do you see yourself in 2 years? You tell them that, but you're internally sometimes not confident where you will be. So you just need to balance that vision, the uncertainty, and the challenges all together and pursue your dreams.
Would you say that you're working harder than you ever have before?
It's different.
Describe how it's different.
I think one, say at a personal level, I say, you know, practicing medicine is not the easiest job either. But here, as what we talked earlier, is that you may have a passion, but you need to see what the audience wants. So the challenges that come with it may be something that you'd never expected. You built something, you're so happy about it that everybody's using it. And then if people don't like it, you have to make a change. You have to work with different types of people as a team. That is something different for me. And I think that will happen in the entrepreneurial world, whoever the person is. You have your engineering team, you have your marketing people, you have need to work with investors, you have your audience. So it's a very different type of people that you'll be engaging with. Working with everyone is different. That's what I said. It's not harder, it's very different.
Yeah. But with that said, I know that you say in those first few years, you have to really, really work super hard. I don't think any entrepreneur would negate that. But I think sometimes people don't define what working hard looks like. You know, some people's definition of working hard is working long hours. For some people, it's being productive. For some, it's results. So what does working hard look like for you?
For me, working hard is, again, as you said, long hours does not mean working hard. Working hard is one, being productive, and two, always thinking about the product, always thinking about the audience, always thinking about how I can make this bigger, how I can make this successful. And then only the ideas come. So if someone says, I go in, I work from 8 to 4, that's it. I just execute those two things that I've been told and I don't think around it. That sometimes in early stage may not be the right thing. You have to see, okay, I'm doing this. You always have to be just hungry for how can I make it successful? How I can deliver more value to the audience?
Moving your projects forward.
Forward, yes. And it comes with productivity. So long hours does not mean anything. You may spend 20 hours a day and you may be not productive at all. So it is always thinking. You have to be progressive. If something is not working, make a change. You cannot just follow the same path. So that's the combination of that productivity and always thinking about something new. My definition of working hard.
And of course, as a doctor, you value your health a lot and you make it a priority to wake up early and work out every single day. So tell me a little bit about a day in your life.
Yeah, I guess that's a personal habit. What I say is, you know, most of the people don't wake up early. So if you wake up early, you can have 2 to 3 hours for yourself. And once the day starts, you will just get sucked up into multiple different things, your meetings, whatever priorities come. So for me, I start at 5:30, and between 5:30 to 8 is my time. Whether it is I work out, breakfast, or just meditate for some time, but that is my time. There are no meetings scheduled because no one schedules meeting that early. And once you have done that, it is much easier to spend the rest of the day because you will never feel that I'm not devoting time to myself. Lots of times entrepreneurs early stage, they start complaining, you know, I'm working so hard, I have no time for myself. So if you are able to get that hour and a half, an hour for yourself first thing in the morning, you'll be just a happier person that, okay, I take care of myself. I have a life around for me and now I am doing my work.
So how many hours would you say that you work every day, or does it vary?
It varies a lot. It varies a lot. I think whenever something needs to be executed, I don't think so there's any dedicated timeline to it. So
sure. And since you're working, or let me start that over. Since you're getting up so early, what time do you go to bed?
I go to bed like around 11.
Okay, gotcha. Well, thank you so much for sharing a little insight into Absolutely. Your world and your business. Really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Alex. It was a pleasure.
Absolutely. We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
The way the business is now, I don't have to wait on a studio to do a film. The way technology is now, from cameras and things like that, I own those things. I own the company, so I'm able to use the artistic business. So I can make my commercial, I can make my movie, I can make my songs, which is, that's what I've been blessed to do. So it's all the same muscle. And I think this is the greatest time in the world to live, where you can literally grab things, you know, out of the air and take it now to so many different ways to promote it and ways to get yeah. out. So it's an entrepreneur's playground right now.
This report is brought to you by Bank of America. The new Bank of America Business Advantage Cash Rewards credit card makes maximizing rewards easy for entrepreneurs. Cardholders can decide how they earn 3% cash back each month, choosing from six popular spending categories, from gas stations to office supply stores and consulting services. Kevin Condon, Bank of America.
Running a small business often means doing many jobs in one. Flexibility is key. So we're excited to put our small business cardholders in charge of how they can earn cash back each month. They now have the power to maximize their rewards to match their changing business priorities. And our Business Advantage Relationship Rewards members earn even more. They get a credit card rewards bonus that can boost the earnings in their choice category to up to 5.25%.
Cardholders can change their cash back choice category once every month in their mobile banking app or through online banking. For more, visit bankofamerica.com/smallbusiness.
I'm Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Joining us right now is Courtney Jones. She's the CEO and co-founder of Sweat Cosmetics. Give us a quick recap. What does your company do?
Yeah. So our company creates cosmetics for the real woman, the active woman, you know, who's busy and hectic at times, but needs something with a little bit of coverage.
Just like yourself.
Right? Yeah, absolutely.
You're the perfect target market of your own product.
Exactly.
So you guys are doing some pretty big stuff right now with Sephora. Mm-hmm. I know you were just sharing that with me. So you guys said that you can't even keep up with the purchase orders coming in from them. So you guys need to raise more money. That's a pretty awesome problem to have.
It's an awesome problem to have. Yeah. We signed a contract with Sephora earlier this year. We launched with them on their online website in June.
So if I go on Sephora.com, I'm going to find you guys.
Oh, yeah.
Sweat Cosmetics.
Oh, yeah. No, all our products are on there.
They're not white labeling or licensing. It says Sweat Cosmetics.
It says Sweat Cosmetics. Oh, yeah. No, it's all us, nice. Which is so cool for us. Sephora is like the number one online cosmetic retailer, I think, in the world. So
it's
awesome.
It's like the brand.
Yeah.
Guys know about it.
Yeah. No, that's exactly my point to the rest of my team. When this opportunity came, they're like, let's look at other places. And I'm like, no, this is number one.
Sephora's number one.
This is top dog. Yeah. So it was something we couldn't say no to. And we were in negotiations with them for a while, launched with them in June. It's been awesome, but it's funny talking to, you know, the people that sort of run the website, the people that run our account versus the purchase orders that come in. They have an entire algorithm of how much is being purchased, how much they need right now. And
so they know like exactly how much product is going to be moved based on projections.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
We've been talking to them, and like I said, since June, it's been great. We had inventory on hand, but it's starting to get a little crazy. So
they're having too many orders coming in, you can't keep up. That's how you lose a company like Sephora. So you guys have to raise money.
Well, they buy from us wholesale, so they have all the products. So if anyone's buying from their website, they take that on. So okay. we only just have to transfer our product. And we have enough right now, but as these POs keep coming every single month, yeah. we're starting to get to the point where we have got to purchase more product.
So rather than raising money and having to give up equity or mm-hmm. take on mm-hmm. loans that you have to pay back, mm-hmm. have you guys considered reaching out to Sephora and having them make the purchase order of the manufacturer?
Yes. They won't do it.
They won't do it?
No.
Why?
I don't think they do that with any other company. So I think
It seems like they would make more money. I mean,
right, right.
They would make more money if they fronted the purchase order.
Yeah, and they would absolutely help us grow sort of as a smaller company.
Versus you having to deal with, you know,
right.
investors and giving up.
Right. No, it's sort of funny learning that because I think just from being a Sephora customer for so long, yeah. now sort of seeing the ins and outs of how they operate, it's just, it's crazy. But they're top dog. Yeah. We sort of have to listen, but it's
it'd be like dealing with like a Walmart. Like you don't have that much say or any say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you even get to deal with them, it's like a blessing.
Yeah. So. We were launching some new products in July and it was even, you know, we told them, you know, we're going to get this product this date. Now that was shipment to us. And so they made a purchase order basically saying the shipping window was that day. And I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Yeah. We got to back up a little bit. You guys have got to give us like a week or two. But I think to them, when they want product, they want it now.
So when you go after your investors, you're mm-hmm. basically raising your third round mm-hmm. right now. You said friends and family, and then mm-hmm. another round from some investors. And now you're going into your third round right now for mm-hmm. a few $1 million. That money is going to pretty much fund the majority of your purchase orders.
Yeah.
Probably be allocated to building your team and growing it a little
Absolutely.
Bit.
Absolutely.
But what I'm wondering is it an investment where you're giving up equity or is it an investment where it's just basically to fund the purchase order and then pay the investor back?
We'll be giving up equity with this round. Okay. And we've been doing that actually in every single round. We're okay with that.
Yeah.
I think what's different about this round in fundraising is our first round was convertible notes. So it was more friends and family. They were giving us some loans back when we first started. Okay. And we just needed some money, honestly, to pay for research and development. And our second round, that helped us get another round of inventory for Sephora, which was huge. Now we're more looking into going towards a venture capitalist. We've been contacted by about 6 or 7 of them, and we're talking to them in a few weeks. We've put on a huge presentation with some analytics and everything that we've done so far and showing our growth at least, because I think we want that connection.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting stuff.
I'm excited and I'm nervous.
What does it feel like to go from sports mm-hmm. and straight into entrepreneurship? I have a similar background,
yeah.
but this is about you right now. What does it feel like shifting from playing at a top level competitive sport mm-hmm. and now, you know, having investors invest millions of dollars in you and being in like your dream position here
right.
with your own company?
Right. No, it's absolutely a dream position. I think right now with even me being the CEO, I've never been the CEO of anything before.
Yeah. And now people are entrusting you with millions.
Yeah, exactly. So there was a learning process. And I think that
there
comes with anything.
There will be many more ahead.
And I absolutely know that. Yeah. And I think the hardest thing was coming straight off the field. I was thrown into this. I was thrown into the CEO. I was thrown into talking to all of our investors and putting on these presentations. Yeah. And I needed to know every little detail.
You have no business
detail.
Background, do you?
No.
You didn't go to school for business?
My major was management and society.
So
got a little bit of business,
okay,
but
so
no.
Okay, so we'll just call it zero business, because I went to business school.
Zero business.
And it's zero help when you compare it to the real world.
No, it's true. So, I mean, even going into legal documents, those are things that I'm signing. I want to understand everything. Yeah. So I think one thing I have learned
is...
Don't
mess up on that stuff.
No, you cannot. the one thing I've learned is just ask questions and people are okay with it, especially at these stages.
Leverage your youth. Right?
In
business,
exactly.
Until you're like 38 in business, you're a
child.
Young.
Yep. Yeah, you're young. So I'm learning that slowly, but there's so much learning involved mm-hmm. with it and decision-making and... you know, it's trial and error, and that's okay.
Why do you feel like people have invested in you? I mean, forget the first round, mm-hmm. friends and family. That doesn't count. They call it, if you ever watch Shark Tank, they call it the 3 F's, friends, families, and fools. Some people might take that as an insult,
awesome.
But it's just like, that's what the $1 billion investors
true.
Say.
It's true.
But why do you think people are entrusting you with all of this money? They say that you bet mm-hmm. on the horse or the jockey, the horse, the product, the jockey, the people.
That's so funny. That's exactly what I was going to say. Maybe not in that saying, but my dad's actually a venture capitalist. So he sort of gave us a little bit of insight. Mm-hmm. And he said, you guys need to present yourselves extremely well, especially not having a product at first.
Investors love, like, I think they invested in the jockey.
Yeah.
Because if you're a high level competitive athlete, mm-hmm. it shows that you know how to play at the pro level. Mm-hmm. And that can be in the pro level at anything.
Absolutely. So they definitely invested in us. And I think the other big thing was most of the people we were talking to were men. Selling a cosmetic brand to men is very difficult. So they almost had to invest in us as people and know our connections and how far we want to take the company. They want to see the passion behind it before they even talked about product.
I think that it's amazing that you guys were able to sell literally just like the concept to people.
Yeah.
And now you're on your third round getting millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
CEO and co-founder of Sweat Cosmetics, Courtney Jones, is joining us right now. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack, and this is Business Rockstars. What is one of the best pieces of advice you have? I know that you're only in your beginning stages as an entrepreneur, but you're still in the fight. You're still in the ring right now. And there's a lot of people sitting at home who haven't yet cut the cord from the 9-to-5 job or from their sport, whatever it may be.
Right.
They haven't gone all in on entrepreneurship as you have.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you feel like the person at home right now who has the 9-to-5 job, listens to this show, trying to connect all the puzzle pieces of when is it the right time? When do I have the money? Or, you know, when do I know if my product is ready to go to market?
Yeah.
What is your advice to that person?
So I think I have two. And one was someone told me this a while ago, and I think everyone's heard this, is when you have a plan B, you're not going to work as hard on plan A. Knowing
so
that
like
you sort
burn
of have
the ships,
backup.
Burn the boats kind of a thing?
Sort of, yeah. So I think that's sort of what I did with soccer was I had that as a backup. I could keep going along with it, but do I want to make a huge stride in my life? And I wanted that answer to be yes. So I quit soccer, retired. I didn't quit. I retired from soccer. And took
better
on,
framing.
Yeah, exactly. And took on Sweat Cosmetics. And it's something that I do every single day, and I'll work till midnight if I have to on getting things done. But my second word of advice is to have confidence in your product and in yourself, because I think that's something that I struggled with for a little bit. And maybe being an athlete, you know, you go through dips of confidence, and and you have times on the field where you're not going to do as well, and maybe you didn't score one game, or you came out early, or got injured, or anything like
that. You're used to failure when you play sports.
You're used to a ton of failure,
especially at a competitive level.
And nothing's different in business, but have that confidence, knowing that you're going to make your product great, and do everything you can to make your product the best product that it possibly can be. Because when you're selling it to people and you tell them, it's amazing, I use it every single day, they're going to listen to you just a little more.
How did you come up with the mindset? And I'm assuming sports probably conditioned it within you. But a lot of people, I mean, it's a funny topic when you aren't there anymore, but a lot of people still struggle with self-doubts and limiting beliefs and their neuroassociation, meaning their belief systems about what failure means to them, is, as we've all at some point, if we've gone through the formal education system with school, we've been brought up to believe that failure is a bad thing. If you fail in school, if you fail in class, people are going to make fun of you. You're going to get held back. Your parents are going to get mad. You're going to get punished.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to get held back from, it's like you're going to miss out.
Yeah.
So we've been conditioned with the belief that failure is a bad thing. And yet the people that are the most successful at anything in life attribute their success to all of their failures and mistakes, which is where they find their lessons.
Totally.
So is it from sports, or how did you develop the mindset that failure is actually a good thing and a learning tool?
I think it's absolutely from sports. So it might be easier for me to say, but I can't tell you how many times, you know, I tried out for a team and didn't make it. It's actually funny. I was just with my friends from my younger soccer team. I was actually the last one to join the team because I didn't make it till I was 13.
But then you were the best.
And then I went the furthest, you know, I was the only one that played professional soccer after that. And I think that's crazy. And it's, you know, I think my parents instilled that in me as well. They were both athletes. So having being brought up in that, that failing is okay as long as you know what you did and know how to fix it. That coachability is huge. So in business, I don't know if I like saying failure, but I definitely use trial and error a lot. It's pretty much the same exact thing. But knowing that you're going to try something, it may go terribly, but then you pick back up, you figure out what went wrong, and you start all over again.
And I think that's the perfect way to phrase it. At the end of the day, I think whether it's sports or business or life, we're going to hit seasons of adversity. We're going to fail. We're going to make mistakes. And it's your ability not only to bounce back, but to learn from it. Courtney,
absolutely.
Pleasure having you on the show.
It was so great to meet you. Thanks so much.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. You can join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
And now, a Business Rockstars Minute. Three things ultra-productive people do differently. I'm Pat O'Brien with the Business Rockstars Minute. Wouldn't you like to have more time to get things done? How do we make the most of the time in our day? Along with setting our daily priorities, here are three things ultra-productive people do to stay on target. One, they don't multitask. It's been proven multitasking actually reduces efficiency. 2, the one-touch rule. They don't have an endless list of emails and phone calls to return. They get it done right away. And 3, they say no, and it means no. Productive people are very selective as to what they commit to. Once they commit, they get it done, and that means with a yes or a no. Apply these 3 simple practices, and you may turn into one of those ultra-productive people we just described. I'm Pat O'Brien, and this has been a Business Rockstars Minute.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter 0707 at checkout. That's harrys.com. Code 0707. Enjoy.
This is your Tech It Out Minute with Mark Saltzman, brought to you by Asus.
So your computer crashed and you've tried everything to retrieve your data, but nothing worked. And now you've lost your photos, music, and other files, right? Wrong. Tim Margeson is from CBL Data Recovery.
Most of the time, it's not going to be a hard drive problem. It's not going to be a problem with the storage media. If it is, you need to make a decision on how important the information is to you before you kind of proceed further on it. Do you have an up-to-date backup? If you do, great. You know, just restore it, move on. If you don't, and you do want to retrieve the information, then you should probably seek out a recovery company at that point in time. Don't try YouTube. Don't try putting the hard drive in a fridge. Don't try any of that pseudoscience stuff. If the information is important to you, then make sure you get it done by somebody who's qualified to do it.
CBLDataRecovery.ca has more info.
That was your Tech It Out Minute, brought to you by Asus.
This is Business Rockstar. We are here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Welcome to Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. Thanks for joining us. This is Adam Shaw, CEO of a great sports app called Sportle, and Adam Goldberg, the founder and CEO of Fresh Brothers, right? And brought sure. pizza in, too. This is CEO Roundtable. You're going to give everybody out there your experiences and advice and hopes for being a CEO. What sort of corporate culture do you have at your place?
The most important thing at Fresh Brothers that we've brought in is we started as a family business, and as we grow, we keep giving that family feeling and attitude and kind of open door that you would have within a family business. But as we grow, of course, we've got to add new employees. So we kind of try to take that along with us.
You got to mold those into the culture, right?
That's right.
How about you, Adam?
So I think it's about, for us, it's about community and about fostering people to actually speak up and voice their opinions. One of the nice things about what we do is the product, the target market for the product is actually very young. So for the less experienced, younger
people. It's an app. Just letting people know.
It's an app. Yeah. So for the younger, less experienced people, they actually have a lot to contribute because it's their media habits that we're actually trying to cater to.
When you start a company or the head of a company, how do you stay passionate?
In my case, eat more pizza.
I was just going to say, besides eat more pizza.
I love it. It's right. It's a product that everybody's got to eat every day, right? And pizza is a community food. So it's gotten us very involved with our communities, involves a lot of children and families. So we're able to do a lot of different things with the pizza, like fundraising and getting events going on and sponsor football fields and basketball fields and so on. So the passion just keeps going. And that's really the fun of what we're doing is just the involvement that we can get within the areas that we build stores.
So does that make it more difficult to satisfy your customers?
Definitely. I mean, you would ask the question about staying passionate, we get a lot of feedback. And so, you know, when people aren't happy, they let us know. And so that's, we're in a day and age where you get your feedback immediately. And so, yeah, it raises the bar. I welcome the challenge because it allows you to continue to grow and to set the bar higher.
The Fine. Biggest challenge in making pizza is the dough, and making sure our dough is consistent.
Is it the water? Tell me.
I'm a big believer it's not the water.
Really?
Yeah. I'll fight that till my death that it's not the water. And what it is it's the quality product, it's the quality ingredients, and it's the service that we bring to each and every one of our customers that makes the difference. So we make a great pizza, and we give a full experience, not just that one slice.
I do know that. But why do New Yorkers always say Ray's original pizza is better than anything? Then they always say, well, it's the water.
Well, they say the same thing about the bagels. And there's actually
exactly.
there's a bagel
That's
shop
all wrong,
in
right?
L.A. that imports New York water.
I'll argue a little bit. Ray's is a great pizza, and New York has some great pizza.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not the water.
I don't believe it's the water.
I love you. I want to win these arguments from now on. What's the biggest mistake that you guys made?
So,
as CEO,
my last company prior to this one, I would be in the board meetings, and I would have a glowing slant to everything I said, rather than really disclose where the pitfalls were.
Right.
I wanted to please everybody, so whatever the message I was communicating, I would massage it to be as positive and inspiring as possible, because I thought that's what they wanted to hear. When in fact, what I really should have done is been as honest as possible and said, hey,
right,
this is going to be trouble.
Billy Joel wrote a song about guys like us. He had to be a big shot, huh? Right? Isn't that the main thing, to meld in with your employees a little bit?
And that's been one of my biggest challenges, actually, is really to let my employees do their work. As an entrepreneur, as someone who started with this company 8 years ago and building a team, I've really had to learn how to let those do their work and not micromanage.
That's hard to do, right?
It is hard to do. And especially with my personality, I like to be involved with
hands
all of
them.
And I'm a hands-on guy. I roll up the sleeves, and I'm never buttoned, and I'm in there. You know, I'll walk into a store on a Friday night right now, and I love to jump on that pizza line. And although they teach me a lot now when I do that.
I wish I could throw them like they do.
I wish I could, too. Can't do it.
It's not the water.
It's not the water.
Boy, am I going to win money on this. What skill set is absolutely necessary to be a CEO?
You have to have thick skin. You're going to encounter all sorts of problems. You're going to talk to people who are going to not share your vision and question whether you should persevere. You're going to talk to people who are going to tell you how to do things differently. Oh, you should pivot and go in this direction. You have to be strong-willed in your decision and thick-skinned not to let that slow you down.
We are here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Pat O'Brien. This is Business Rockstars. Adam Goldberg, the founder and CEO of Fresh Brothers, right?
That's great.
And Adam Shaw, the CEO of Sportle, which is a great sports app. How do you stay focused? There's so many pizzas. There's so many sports opportunities. So how do you stay focused on yours?
For me, lists. I have list after list after list.
What do they say?
What I'm doing today, what I'm doing next week, what I'm doing a year down the road, I'm putting notes in for the future. Just a bit, there's so much going on running my company, even at 15 stores going to 25 right now. And we're planning so far out in advance that if I don't put it down, if I don't have a great calendar and great help from around, I won't be successful.
Is it better to have experience or school? What do you think?
It depends on the role. It really does depend on the role. I think there are certain positions where having a great education adds a tremendous amount of value. But I think a lot of people in the technology industry today are self-taught. And so it really is about experience.
Give us the three best things and worst things about being a CEO.
It's mine. You know, it's my baby.
Okay, paycheck. Go ahead.
For me, it was the idea that we then took to this level,
right
as the entrepreneur. That's one. I love our staff. I love having people work for our company and supporting their families. Put that on the worst.
That's cool.
On the worst list, too, because the responsibility. It's a huge responsibility for us that we have now over 500 employees that depend on us. Their families depend on us. We provide insurance. When the kids get sick, dad's making a decision or mom's making a decision. Do I go to work today or do I stay home? And those are life decisions, and we provide that platform for our employees.
Let's end on a positive note. What's the best? That is positive, though, that you're helping all those people.
So I think it's great being able to be the ultimate decision maker. You know, when you are the guy, ultimately the final decision, the final cut is yours. Mm-hmm. And so the company succeeds or fails based on your decisions. And I think, you know, that's something which, if you embrace it, is a great thing.
Adam, thank you very much. Adam Squared.
Adam Squared.
From now on. We are here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars. This has been CEO Roundtable. I'm Pat O'Brien. We'll see you next time.